Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. As we have been discussing over the past couple of days, if Roe is overturned next month, 26 states are certain or likely to ban abortion, and that means the inter-jurisdictional abortion wars are coming. A new legal article called The New Abortion Battleground examines the roadmap for what lies ahead. David Cohen of Drexel University School of Law, Greer Donnelly from the University of Pittsburgh School of Law, and today's guest, Rachel Ribouchet of Temple University Beasley School of Law, write, "Judges and scholars have long claimed that abortion law will become simpler if Roe is overturned, but that is woefully naive. Some states will pass laws banning their citizens from out-of-state abortions, while others will pass laws insulating their providers from out-of-state prosecutions. State legislatures are already introducing and drafting bills to this effect. The federal government will also stake a claim. Beyond promoting access to medication abortion, federal regulations may preempt state abortion bans, and federal land could provide shelter for abortion services. Ultimately, once the constitutional protection for pre-viability abortion disappears, the impending battles over abortion access will transport the half-century war over Roe into a new arena, one that will make abortion jurisprudence more complex than ever before." Later in the show, we'll check in with a California provider to find out how clinics are responding. Joining us now to discuss the new abortion battleground legal paper is Rachel Ribouchet, interim dean and professor of law at Temple University's Beasley School of Law. Rachel Ribouchet is co-author of The New Abortion Battleground, which you can find at yourcallradio.org. Hi, Rachel. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this is one of the first papers that looks at these important issues, and you really go in depth. First off, how did you and your colleagues do the background on these issues?
So it's thank you. What happened was really in the summer of 2020, not long after the Supreme Court had granted cert in Dobbs, the case that many believe, and now with some more evidence, that will overturn Roe v. Wade, the case in which the Justice Alito's draft opinion was leaked. David Cohen, who lives in Philadelphia as well, and I were having lunch and talking about, you know, what comes next. And we started just hypothesizing the criminal and civil implications of the types of laws that states will pass when they ban abortion and the types of laws that states could pass to protect abortion access. And I'm a healthcare prof. I also write in family law and reproductive health. And Greer Donnelly is an expert in FDA law and also a health prof. And David focuses on con law. And the three of us started talking, and we just started to try to map all the possibilities. And that's how we started drafting, just piece by piece, possibility by possibility. And that's a little bit why the paper is a bit expansive. But as we thought through the legal complications to come, we were also interested in what are some of the creative, innovative, different types of strategies that legislators, advocates will deploy on both sides of the abortion question. So that's some of what you saw in the article as well.
One of the strong statements you all make is that judges and scholars have long claimed that abortion law will become simpler if Roe is overturned, but you write that is woefully naive. Can you expand on that?
Well, so interestingly, it's an argument that's circulated since Roe, but really since Casey. And Casey is the 1992 case that upheld Roe v. Wade, but changed the constitutional test for striking down abortion restrictions. And the argument is that, you know, Roe in announcing a right to abortion protected under the 14th Amendment, created a trimester framework for courts to assess whether or not the restriction applied in the first trimester or second trimester. Casey updated that test by asking courts to consider if the restriction applied before viability or after viability. But the argument is that thinking about the constitutionality of a state law based on whether it applies before or after viability is really messy. Viability is a moving target. The test to decide if a pre-viability law should stand is called the undue burden standard. That's a very fact-specific standard, the argument says, and it asks courts to apply laws and potentially assess laws and potentially reach different outcomes based on the facts of the case. So it invites litigation, and it can incentivize litigation that has different results. I think that, yeah.
No, please go ahead.
So, and you see this argument in Justice Alito's leaked draft. He says one of the reasons to overturn Roe v. Wade in thinking about these five factors for overturning longstanding precedent is if the law is unworkable. And this is just the argument that he makes, that Roe and Casey together with this undue burden standard create unworkable law because there's too much litigation and too many mixed results. But what we try to show in our paper, and what I think is becoming increasingly clear, is that the legal landscape is only going to become more complex as states legislate their own abortion policies, are in conflict with each other. And litigation is going to abound between state and federal government, between states, within states. I think that's a little bit of what we meant.
This is so important because you go into detail about the ability or the inability by law to travel out of state. You write about telehealth, medication abortion, and what could possibly happen on federal land. And you write, there is no guarantee that all or even any of these strategies will work, especially because some of them will rely on courts that might be hostile to abortion rights. And that got me thinking about all of the judges that the Trump administration appointed. Huge numbers of judges. According to Pew Research, Trump stands out for the large number of federal appeals court judges he appointed in only 4 years. More than a quarter of currently active federal judges are now Trump appointees. And some people are saying that when you look at the ability to travel across state lines, that might go back to the Supreme Court. So this is not going to be the end of the Supreme Court's decision on abortion.
In no way. I can't imagine that it is. Okay. I mean, for instance, if Missouri is successful in passing the amendment that it proposed this spring, which would allow Missouri courts to entertain lawsuits against providers outside of Missouri who perform abortions on residents of Missouri. So this is, for instance, the Missouri resident who travels to California. This law would ostensibly create a cause of action for someone to sue the California provider in the Missouri court for the California abortion that they performed. There are lots of legal challenges to that law. A lot of them sound in the Constitution. We have a right to travel. States can impede other states' interstate commerce, citizenship rights. So there will be litigation over those kinds of laws. There may be litigation over the types of laws that California is considering right now, for instance, shielding its providers, shielding California patients from the reach of other states who might seek to extradite them or subpoena them or issue discovery requests or the like. So I think you're going to see more conflict, and I think we're going to ask courts to resolve some of those issues.
How would something like this be enforced? In your paper, you point out that over 3,300 Missouri patients traveled to other states in 2020 to obtain an abortion, most of them to Illinois or Kansas. So how would something like this even be enforced?
So I think that's also the real challenge of bans generally. You would have to assert jurisdiction over a provider if that's your target. Right now, states don't target patients. They don't punish the person who had the abortion. Texas, for instance, is under SB 8, doesn't target the abortion seeker. They target the provider with the Texas license and the person aiding or abetting that abortion. But that could change, and that would make the enforcement question different. But you're absolutely right that without the ability to assert jurisdiction over someone, and if a state doesn't comply, travel bans are going to be difficult to enforce.
You know, it's already so difficult for doctors. Some doctors travel and they upend their lives because they care so deeply about this issue. And I mean, this headline in Politico just... it's just head spinning. Abortion bans and penalties would vary widely by state. The penalties vary and could include hefty fines or the suspension of a medical license. Right. And they have this graphic of all of these states. Somewhere like Texas, you could face up to life in prison if you provide an abortion. And then I'm looking at, let's see, Utah, Wisconsin, Missouri, Tennessee, up to 15 years. And then Wyoming, up to 14 years. We're talking about potential jail time for providers.
So jail time for providers, civil lawsuits, as you said, losing your license, having your malpractice insurance go up so significantly that it effectively puts you out of practice. There's a lot of risk. And so that's why a lot of folks think that the kind of law that Connecticut passed and the laws that the state is considering are very important, because they also shield providers from criminal lawsuits of other states. The Connecticut law, for instance, says, Connecticut provider, if you're providing an abortion that's legal, we will not comply with that other state's request. They shield them from disciplinary action. But of course, the state of Missouri could still be a suit in Missouri that's entered against you, let's say hypothetically a default judgment. And, then are providers risking taking on risk if they have to travel through Missouri? there is a lot of risk, and it's going to be a very complicated future for providers.
Are lawyers ready for this? Because yesterday we spoke with Robin Marty, who's operations director for the West Alabama Women's Center in Tuscaloosa. And I was reading a piece about the president of one of these, extreme anti-choice groups who has spent his life working to ensure that abortion is illegal in Alabama. I mean, decades of his life. He's a lawyer, and they've got a lot of money. They have a lot of energy. I mean, this is like their ultimate goal is to overturn Roe. And they've succeeded. I mean, they're about to succeed. So when you think about the millions of dollars and all of the resources they have, what about the abortion rights side? Because right now, clinics are just trying to stay open. And they're trying to raise money to ensure that people can fly. But what about the legal landscape? How are people preparing for this?
I think there are concerted efforts to not just think about the advice people need to interpret and apply their own states and other states' abortion laws, but I think there are lots of people thinking about what alliances they need to form with people who specialize in criminal law, people who are experts in telehealth policies, people who are familiar with licensure, those who have expertise in extradition. So I do think there is a strong movement to build a cohort, a cadre of lawyers, of academics, of advocates who can bring different types of expertise to the table. If when HAL, which is based in San Francisco, I believe, or maybe it's in Oakland, but it's a national organization that is has started a repro defense fund that you know, is gathering resources and funding and support for people who are going to be subject to some of these laws in the future. So there are, I think, a lot of interesting efforts underway.
And this is all very costly, right?
So I think that's, you know, that's part of this as well. There's the cost of, so do you mean for the providers or for, you know, litigation is costly, defending a lawsuit is costly. It certainly is a cost that's difficult for providers to absorb when they are both trying to maintain their clinics, which are, you know, going to be overwhelmed with demand as they are engaging potentially in telehealth to serve patients in other states that allow telehealth. I think there are going to be a lot of stressors on providers' time and energy and talents and beyond the financial stressors.
Right. Well, and as we've been talking about over the past week or so, the extreme anti-abortion side has a lot of money from the Federalist Society, for example, the Koch Network. According to True North Research, the effort to pack the court, these groups, so many groups, have raised about $600 million to reshape the courts. And you can find those shows at yourcallradio.org. Today, we are speaking with Rachel Ribouchet, interim dean and professor of law at Temple University's Beasley School of Law. She's co-author of The New Abortion Battleground. This is a legal paper that looks at the interjurisdictional abortion wars that are coming. And you can find the paper at yourcallradio.org. If you have any questions or comments about what is going to happen at the state level, if you just take a look at the Guttmacher Institute, where 26 states are certain to or likely to ban abortion, places like Louisiana are just surrounded by states where it's illegal. So if you're living in Louisiana, you have no choice but to fly or drive to North Carolina or Kansas or New Mexico. But even those places are going to be completely overwhelmed because so many people are going to be trying to make appointments. And then what happens if it's illegal, if you can't leave the state in Louisiana? Then what happens? That's what we're talking about today. If you have any questions, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. In about 10 minutes, we will check in with Planned Parenthood Marmonte, which covers Northern and Central California and Northern Nevada, to find out how they are preparing. Let's talk a little bit about telehealth. As you point out in the paper, the rise of telehealth for medication abortion completed solely with medication during the first 10 weeks of pregnancy, will make abortion access increasingly untethered to state borders. Virtual clinics offering remote medication abortion through telehealth have begun to operate in greater numbers, and brick and mortar clinics have expanded their practice into virtual care as well. So how could telehealth possibly be affected by all of this?
So I think, so just as a little bit of background, so medication abortion, set of pills, as you said, before 10 weeks of pregnancy. And what's really changed is that the FDA regulates the first drug in this two-drug regimen. It's called mifepristone, and it's approved mifepristone to end a pregnancy since 2000. It's revised its restrictions on mifepristone several years ago. But in December 2021, it allowed something that it hadn't allowed before on a permanent basis. It permanently in state lifted a restriction, which it had done for a portion of the pandemic, that mifepristone be picked up at a healthcare facility. With that restriction lifted, certified providers can mail medication abortion to the patients that they prescribe it to. And that is what's really supported the proliferation of virtual clinics. So Choice is CHOIX is a California-based of clinic that is provides virtual care, and that's changing access in the sense that providers who have licenses across states and in the states in which telehealth is permitted, there are 19 states that do not permit it. After Roe is overturned, or if Roe is overturned, You could see a provider in Maine, for instance, being able to assist the influx of patients in New Mexico if they are licensed in New Mexico by being able to serve patients through telehealth. So it'll help. I think the thinking is that telehealth might ease some of the burden on providers who can provide virtual care across the country. That certainly doesn't solve the problem for patients that are in or residing in states that ban abortion. So to be clear, some cohort of states already ban telehealth for abortion. But if Roe's overturned and the 26 states that are suspected to ban almost all abortion do, that will include medication abortion. It will include telehealth for it. And so what do those patients in those states do? And as you mentioned, they travel to a place where it's permitted, or many people believe that we'll see a significant increase in self-managed abortion. So in Texas, for instance, when SB 8 went into effect, the organization Aid Access saw a dramatic increase in the use of its services. It is a organization that partners people with the provider in Europe, who then orders medication abortion to be sent to the patient from a pharmacy in India. And it circumvents the bans of a state like Texas. Medication abortion is, I think, going to increase in people's use, and I think that you will see virtual clinics potentially proliferate.
Well, it's incredible.
I already said proliferate.
It's incredible to think about this, because according to the Guttmacher Institute, medication abortion has become the most common method of abortion. In 2000, medication abortion was at 0%. Today, it's at 54%.
I think it's and it'll never be at 100%, of course, because, or anywhere close to it, because people will still need brick and mortar clinics. If you have a pregnancy that's over 10 weeks, if you take medication that will have a negative reaction with the two drugs that are in a medication abortion, if you are at risk of an ectopic pregnancy, you know, there are things that are going to take you out from take you out of the population of people who could use a medication abortion. But I think you're right. I think you're going to see a steady increase, and maybe even a more dramatic increase than we would have otherwise seen had the Supreme Court not overturned Roe.
You know, what's devastating about this is if these pills are not going to be accessible, the danger just increases, because obviously if you had a choice, you'd rather take the pills than have a surgical procedure. And NPR interviewed a young woman, a 32-year-old Marisol, who was seeking an abortion, and she was in Texas. She went to a clinic in Houston. She thought she was under the 6-week deadline, but it was too late, so she could not get an abortion. But with the pill, some providers require a return visit. So she'd have to leave the state and then request the pill, go back home, and then go back again and travel. She only wanted to leave the state once, so she had no choice but to get a surgical abortion. She should have been able to take this pill, but she couldn't. This is going to happen. We're going to hear so many stories about this in the coming weeks and months.
I think some of the return visit, that was something that the FDA at one point required, but now it recommends. That is a follow-up visit that could easily be done. I should say easily, but could well be done over telehealth, over online counseling or telephone or the like. And, you know, that speaks to a lot of the restrictions that are on medication abortion now. No state has banned it. States will if they can after Roe, but now they impose all other sorts of restrictions on it. In-person counseling and ultrasound, physician-only dispensation and the like. But I think it's a great comment because in a world in which there are real pockets of demand and not enough providers in neighboring states or in adjoining regions, it will be a real question about how the clinics that exist and the providers who are offering virtual services, what they're asking of patients, what they're requiring of patients that they see.
We have a couple calls and we have to let Rachel go soon, so I'll ask your questions. Greg in Palo Alto says, how can Missouri tell California what to do?
It's a great question. So I think that's at the heart of what I think will drive the debate is it's a real, it's not something that we expect. It's not something that we consider states do. It flies in the face of our history of cooperation, of comedy between states. And so I think there will be challenges, not only in court, but also conflicts between states in which California just says, no, we're not, we will not participate in enforcing that law. So I think it's untested ground. I think it's going to raise a number of questions, some of which we haven't seen the like of since the Civil War.
Wow. Before we let you go, Rachel, you also say that things will greatly change depending on who is president. Interjurisdictional legal conflict will arise because the federal government may play a more pronounced role in abortion law. A pro-choice president or Congress could deploy a variety of strategies to protect abortion rights, while an anti-abortion president or Congress could do the opposite, as was evident by the various anti-abortion efforts by the Trump administration. This is really important. Can you tell us more about this?
Well, I think the federal government, you know, of course, in addition to supporting, you know, throwing its weight behind legislation through its ability to administer programs, through its power to preempt state law, you know, we saw a clear example in the FDA, frankly. The rule that I talked about that changed, that was on the back of litigation where a federal district court had enjoined or suspended the rule for the length of the pandemic as a means to decrease provider and patient contact. And during the fall of 2020, after that decision was handed down, the FDA, with different leadership under the Trump administration, fought the court's ruling, asked the Supreme Court to reinstate the rule to require patients to go physically pick up pills that they're going to take at home. One of the only restrictions in our, you know, of the 17,000 drugs that the FDA regulates, it was the only drug that you had to pick up, but could take by yourself. And the Supreme Court agreed. They reinstated the rule for a few months until there was an election. There was new leadership at the FDA, and the FDA considered the evidence and suspended the rule for the duration, the rest of the pandemic. So elections matter. They matter a lot.
Well, Rachel, huge thanks to you and your colleagues for putting together this important paper. And we'll see what happens next month because the decision is coming down and we'd love to have you back because I am certain, as you all point out in the paper, we're going to see a flurry of laws at the state level. So thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much. Pleasure to be here.
Rachel Ribouchet is interim dean and professor of law at Temple University's Beasley School of Law. She's the author of The New Abortion Battleground, which is a new legal article that examines the roadmap for what lies ahead, and you can find the paper at yourcallradio.org. Coming up after a break, we'll speak with Stacy Cross, president and CEO of Planned Parenthood Marmonte, which covers Northern and Central California and Northern Nevada. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll discuss The Power of Big Oil, a new three-part frontline documentary that examines the fossil fuel industry's decades-long campaign to mislead the public, cast doubt on the science, and to delay action on climate change. The film exposes how this very well-funded industry, particularly ExxonMobil and Koch Industries, have used their wealth and influence to block climate change policies. We hope you can join us for that show tomorrow. Today, we are continuing our coverage on what will happen if Roe is overturned next month. 26 states are certain or likely to ban abortion, and that means that the interjurisdictional abortion wars are coming. So what's going to happen in California? Governor Gavin Newsom recently said, "We cannot trust the Supreme Court to protect the right to abortion, so we'll do it ourselves. Women will remain protected here." California is proposing an amendment to enshrine the right to choose in the state constitution. Lawmakers will vote on legislation to create a fund for low-income patients and people traveling out of state. Joining us now is Stacy Cross, president and CEO of Planned Parenthood Marmonte, which covers Northern and Central California and Northern Nevada. Hi, Stacy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
Is it Marmonte or Marmonte?
It's Marmonte.
Marmonte.
From the sea to the mountains, and we're the largest Planned Parenthood in the country. And as you said, we cover 13 counties of Nevada and half of the counties of California.
Well, I just want to ask you about a couple of the issues that came up in our last segment. Greg just called in and said, how could a state like Missouri tell California what to do? As you know, this recent Missouri bill would apply Missouri's current abortion restrictions to out-of-state abortions performed on Missouri citizens. What happened if Idaho, Wyoming, Utah, or Arizona implements similar laws and people fly to California to get the procedure?
It's the Missouri. I've been following Missouri for a while because one of my sons worked in politics there. So it's been it's just an absolutely heart-wrenching and crazy law. I just don't see how it's going to be found constitutional. But one of the things that has happened with the future of abortion work here in California is that there are laws that we are looking bills to pass that will protect our providers if there's ramifications from other states, if a patient comes to California to get their procedure.
What are you hearing from providers right now, Stacy? Because, you know, providers who are so dedicated to this work, they often fly to other states. And we talked about this in the last segment. Politico looked at the penalties that would occur state by state. So if you're a provider in Texas, you could face up to life in prison. Tennessee, right. Wisconsin, Utah, up to 15 years. What are you hearing from providers right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just horrific. And I think people are actually more resolute than ever to continue to provide abortion services. So they're going to be they're being very careful in the states where laws have already been implemented, like in Texas with SB 8. But they are going to, we're going to see more providers come to here in California to be able to continue to provide the services that they've been trained to provide. We are getting a list of all the states, you know, when June happens, and if Roe does in fact get overturned completely, like the leak said, of course, there's so many other ramifications. This is not just about abortion, as I'm sure your previous speaker talked about, that this is going to go into birth control and gay marriage and interracial marriage, just so many things. We've never had a court that was taking rights away like we're seeing right now.
How are you all preparing for this? I read that according to KPBS, You have treated 66 out of state patients at your California clinics between September and March, including 22 patients from Texas.
It's actually a little bit more. That's a little bit outdated. It's getting closer to 90 or 100. Wow. All of the patients that have come from Texas have all come since September 1st when SB 8 went into effect. So we're preparing right now, and really every time we have a presidential election and we think that this could be a possibility. And of course, I, like many, knew this was going to be a great possibility with the outcome of the election in November of 2016. We always prepare for this as a possibility, hoping that we won't need to implement this. But what we've been doing is that we've been increasing the number of abortion providers that we have. We've increased their training so that they're going to the highest level of their licensure. We are also expanding access in several of our centers. We have 34 centers right now. We have one that is just getting ready to reopen in Oakland. But we've also bought additional land, like, for example, in Reno. We're in a very tiny site there. We've bought land there and are breaking ground later this month so that we can more than triple our capacity in Reno for patients that will be flying in. We try to locate our sites now near mass transportation and also near airports for easier access for our patients. And we're looking at expanding in sites that we're currently not. For example, we know that Utah is going to be one of the states that goes dark. So we're looking at a site that will be easy access for patients from Utah to come into Nevada to receive services. So really, we have looked at every possibility, and we're preparing for as much as 230 to 500 additional patients a week at our affiliate.
230 to 500. I mean, this is amazing to think about, Stacy, that you're planning a new facility in Reno that is close to the airport. And I just searched, a flight from Dallas, Texas to Reno, Nevada is about 3.5 hours. And the flights cost about $400, even $520, at least that's what I'm finding right now. So you're going to have to fly. I mean, and to have the procedure and then most likely have to spend the night. I mean, that would be difficult to do all of this in one day.
Yeah, it depends on what type of procedure that you're going to have. If you're going to do what we call a medication abortion, a person can fly in, essentially get all that work done and get the testing done and fly back. But they, depending on their state laws, normally a patient would then go home and do take the second medication. If you're flying back to Texas or some of these states that are going to be very restricted, we're probably going to have to expand housing availability for patients. And the state, I mean, our governor is a phenomenal champion. I feel really blessed that we're living in a state that strongly supports reproductive rights and has done all this work with the future of abortion. And one of the things that just got passed in the budget yesterday was uncovered compensated care for uninsured patients for abortions. And this is going to help cover the uninsured costs for patients that are going to be coming out of state, but also uninsured costs in state for some cases. And then also help us with some of the other costs, housing, transportation, things like that.
All right, we're joined by Stacy Cross, president and CEO of Planned Parenthood Marmonte, which covers Northern and Central California and Northern Nevada. California is going to be accepting 230 to 500 patients a week because abortion will most likely be illegal in their states. If you have any questions for Stacy about how California clinics are preparing, possibly if you'd like to get involved, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. You know, I have to say, Stacey, it's still surreal that we are talking about people flying from, let's just name the state, Texas, Arkansas, Oklahoma, North Dakota, Nebraska, to a state like California to have a procedure or to get pills. Because I mentioned the case of a woman in Texas, thanks to NPR for this, and she wanted to get the pill, but then she'd have to do a return visit. And so because of that, she had no choice but to have a surgical abortion.
Yeah, again, it depends on how far along she is and the regulations with the states. And the state has looking at things to make access easier. And I wanted to clarify, when I said 230 to 500, that is just at my affiliate. There are six other Planned Parenthood affiliates. There are seven in total. And so the Guttmacher Institute is saying that we should prepare for about a 3,000% increase in our patient numbers all across the state of California, which is a huge and significant number. But they patients can fly in, and I think the state is accommodating and looking at regulations so that they don't necessarily have to have that follow-up, that they can do it in other ways. And so they're really doing everything to improve access as much as possible. And I totally agree with you when you were talking about the different states that people are coming from. It really is, we're surrounded by states. You know, really we have the West Coast, and then we have Colorado and Montana and Minnesota and Illinois and New Mexico, and then you go to the East Coast. That's how bleak it looks for people seeking abortions across America.
How will a 3,000% increase in California affect California patients, especially low-income patients living in rural areas?
Well, this is why it's really important that all of the California affiliates are increasing their access capacity, because the last thing that we want to do is limit access for our current California patients. You know, this is going to impact, it's true in all states, that this is going to impact low-income people of color the most, because they're more limited in their ability to travel. So that's why we're increasing our capacity, so that we do not take away from our current patients in serving the patients that will be coming to us from out of state.
This is also going to be head spinning for people. I was just thinking about, you know, working moms. Let's say someone has two or three jobs. That happens regularly in this country, and has two children. This working mom is going to have to navigate this system to not only figure out, you know, in her state, what is legal and what is not legal, what clinic is friendly to her, what clinic is not friendly to her, and then to try to figure out where to go, how to pay for it, how to get childcare.
Absolutely. And so we've set up some sites. There's Abortion Finder that'll make it easier for you. But if you look at your local Planned Parenthood online, ours is ppmarmonte.org, you will be able to look at where you can go within California and where you can go across the country to one of our health centers. And we're partnering throughout this with our independent provider, because it's going to take all of us collectively working together. But you're absolutely right. This is the, you know, a patient that receives an abortion is more likely already has children and is working one or sometimes two jobs. And you're going to have to figure out childcare, transportation, housing. And then depending on your state, how do you get out of that state safely? So it is going to be incredibly challenging. And as you've already mentioned, the fact that this is happening in 2022 in the United States of America is just absolutely shocking. Shocking. And it's just, we have become second-class citizens.
You know, and looking at this Roe v. Wade map where states where it's going to be illegal, I just keep thinking, Stacey, about the teenagers who cannot talk to their parents about this issue. And this is across the board. I mean, you could even, you know, live in this very sort of healthy environment with parents who absolutely love you and all of that. but you still cannot talk to them about this issue. What are these teens going to do?
Absolutely. They're going to be looking online. They're going to be trying to search this with their phones. They're going to be figuring out how to get somewhere else. But I think the bottom line is, and this is what we have to think about, is that making abortion illegal does not make abortion go away. It is going to just make it unsafe for people seeking abortions, and also have an impact potentially on their future fertility. In my own family, my father's mother died in 1934 from an illegal abortion. Mm. We were always told growing up that she died from a ruptured appendix. It wasn't until I'd been doing this job 5 years that my great aunt told me how she actually died. But when you think about that, there are thousands and thousands of stories of mothers, daughters, sisters, girlfriends that died from other reasons. But the reality was that they died from illegal abortions, and we're going to see that happening again.
Mm, I'm so sorry to hear that. Yes. What do you think will happen? Because what I keep reading is that we're not going to see what happened before Roe was decided. What are your thoughts on that?
Because we have greater technology now.
Right.
Because we now, women and people seeking abortions can access medication abortions regardless of where they live. So they can access the medication online through different sites. And we also are more organized now. We will know where to send people. We're getting resources so that we have can fulfill all their needs as far as travel costs, the procedure costs, childcare, housing, food while you're here. Because if you're low income, all those things are going to come up. Right. And also, it's not going to be just people flying. It's going to be people driving and driving to different states that are safe. But they have to do their homework ahead of time because they don't want to arrive at a state that they, even if it's legal, that it is now out of the scope of what they need for their services. So they do need to be looking ahead and finding out what's available and getting the resources that they need. There are abortion funds here in California and also in Nevada that people can give money to help cover some of those costs. And again, our state has made that available. But I think I agree with you. There's going to be, because of access to medication abortion, we're going to see hopefully not as many people die. That would be my goal.
Wow. Stacey, what are your thoughts on how there's no exceptions in many cases for rape and incest? I mean, this is how far they are going now.
Yeah, that is just heart-wrenching. I was just looking at the latest update, for example, on Missouri. There is no exception for rape or incest. It's only in a medical emergency that is life-threatening for the patient or will cause irreversible physical impairment of a major bodily function. So what does that mean? It doesn't mean if you were raped, you can get an abortion there is what that means. Or if you're, you know, were raped by a family member that you can get an abortion there. So it's just, and all these laws, and it sounds like you've already covered them, that have passed with jail time and even the death penalty in some cases. It's just these trigger laws are going to be incredibly frightening. And I just hope we're prepared as much as possible. And our doors are always going to be open to take care of any patient that walks through our doors.
We have a question from Betsy in Berkeley. Betsy, we're almost out of time, so I'm sorry we can't take your call. Betsy is a doula, and she mm-hmm. wonders, how can people with her skills help women who need or have had abortions?
Well, one, go online and see what you can do if you want to volunteer or work with an organization that will be providing abortion services. There's lots to, there's going to be critical need, because if you can imagine an increase of 3,000 patients here, there's going to be a need for all hands on deck to take care of all the patients walking or flying into our state to take care of those patients.
And what can others do? People who just want to get involved and help in some way or offer support in some way?
Well, again, you can go online. For our site, it's ppmaromonte.org and fight back. There's going to be protests if you want to get out. There are going to be protests all across the country this Saturday. You can look at the nearest protest near you, not just in California, but all across the country. You can share your story if you have had an abortion, and one in four women and other people seeking abortions have had abortions in their lifetime. We need to share those stories. We need to destigmatize, because an abortion is just part of women's health care. And you can help by volunteering locally and by giving back and donating locally. So there is a lot of things that you can do. And if you want to know what to do, go to your local Planned Parenthood or just look online on where you can help the most.
Stacy Cross is president and CEO of Planned Parenthood Marmonte, which covers Northern and Central California and Northern Nevada. Stacy, thank you so much for your work. Thanks for joining us, and we'd love to have you back.
Thank you so much, and I really appreciate this opportunity. We need to keep talking so people know what to do and
we'll definitely keep talking. Thank you so much. And as Stacy mentioned earlier, according to the Guttmacher Institute, California could see an almost 3,000 increase in the number of people whose nearest legal abortion provider is in the state. And that means that the patient load would go from 46,000 to 1.4 million patients. So we will definitely continue to follow this very important issue. If you missed any of our shows this week, we looked at all the dark money behind these laws and then how we got here with gerrymandering and the Electoral College. You can find those shows at yourcallradio.org. And I hope you can join us for tomorrow's Media Roundtable. We'll discuss the power of big oil. It is a new three-part Frontline documentary. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.